Chapter 16. Wheels Within Wheels. General Morton shifted uncomfortably in the shuttle's oversized jump seat and tried to conceal the scowl on his face by pretending to study the view beyond the small window at his left.
"If I could perhaps get some idea of what it is you're looking for, I could arrange for a presentation from the garrison senior officers."
"That would defeat the purpose of the inspection," Zahariel replied from his seat across the shuttle's passenger cabin. "In fact, it would be best if the troops never knew I was there."
"Very well," Morton rasped,
though Zahariel could see that his weathered face was still troubled. The Terran officer stared out the window for a moment more, debating what to say next. After a moment, he drew a deep breath and said,
"You asked me to inspect the troops at Northwilds to provide a cover for your own activities."
"That's right," Zahariel admitted. He didn't want to lie to the man any more than he had to. "We'll part ways once the shuttle lands, and it's likely I won't be returning with you back to Alderaak." He spread his hands. "I regret that I can't be any more candid, but this is Legion business. I'm sure you understand."
"Yes, of course," Morton said readily,
but there was no mistaking the wary look in the old general's eye. For a brief moment, Zahariel wondered if there was something that the general was hiding. But he quickly dismissed the thought with a flash of irritation. He had no reason to distrust Morton, Zahariel reminded himself forcibly. The man was, by all accounts, an honourable and dedicated soldier, and had every reason to wonder at Zahariel's request for an unannounced inspection of the garrison at the Northwilds Arcology. The fact was, Zahariel couldn't afford to make his presence known to the local troops or the administratum officials struggling to maintain order across the Arcology's war-torn sectors. It would lead to pointed questions that he could ill afford to answer. The last thing he wanted was for General Morton, or worse, Magos Bosk, to learn that a member of the Legion was meeting secretly with rebel leaders in the midst of the most hotly contested population centre on the planet. It was unlikely that either of the Terrans would take the news well. As much as he hated the idea of concealing his actions, Zahariel was forced to admit that when it came down to it, Morton and Bosk acted in the best interests of the Imperium, not Caliban itself. Shafts of late afternoon sunlight slanted through the window to Zahariel's right as the military shuttle began a wide diving turn towards their destination. The librarian craned his neck to peer out the window to the northeast, where the Arcology rose sharp-edged against the backdrop of the weathered mountain range further north. The Northwilds Arcology had been built according to the standard Imperial template. It was an irregularly stepped pyramid that, even still in its initial stages, was 5 kilometres wide at its base and rose more than 3 kilometres into the cloudy sky. Narrow streets radiated away from the Arcology across the plain, surrounded by hundreds of smaller buildings that had yet to be subsumed by the structure's ever-expanding footprint. Each Arcology was constructed in a similar fashion on newly compliant Imperial worlds. First would come the labourers and their families, relocated by the tens of thousands from towns and villages all over the hemisphere. They would be resettled in a town at the site of the new Arcology, which would spread outwards in all directions as its population swelled. Then, once there was a large enough labour pool that had been sufficiently trained to begin work, the digging of the Arcology's foundation would begin. The structure would grow in stages, expanding outwards, upwards and downwards at the same time. Little by little, the Arcology would swallow up the town, its residents progressively reassigned to districts inside the structure itself. The population would continue to grow as well, along with the civil services and bureaucracy that went along with it. In theory, the population and organisational growth would match the growth of the structure so closely that by the time the structure was complete, the Arcology would be fully populated and self-sufficient. Of course, such things rarely ever went precisely according to plan. "How many people are at Northwilds these days?" Zahariel asked.
"You mean civilians? About 5 million, all told," Morton replied. "About a quarter of that are Imperial citizens from off-world. Administratum officials, engineers, industrial planners and the like."
Zahariel consulted facts and figures committed to memory before leaving Alderaak.
"A Stage 1 Arcology is built to support twice that number," he observed. "So half of the structure is still unoccupied."
Morton shrugged.
"The Imperium's industrialization plan calls for 20 Stage 1 Arcologies across Caliban, but the planet's population won't be able to support that for some time yet.
The librarian frowned thoughtfully. That seems like a great deal of extra work. One would think that they would build new structures as needed, rather than all at once. Morton spread his gnarled hands.
Who can say? The administratum has its reasons, I don't doubt.
How is the population distributed throughout the arcology? Sahariel inquired.
We're keeping the natives penned into the lower levels, the general rasped. The garrison, the administratum infrastructure, and the off-world residents are housed on the upper levels where we can keep them secure.
Zahariel gave the general a flat stare. Natives? He said. Morton's scowl vanished.
My apologies, sir,
he said, straightening in his seat. An embarrassed flush began to spread up his thick neck.
Just a figure of speech. I meant no offence.
No, of course not, the librarian replied coolly. How are you managing to provide basic services to the population? Morton drew in a quick breath.
Well, I won't deny it's difficult. The lower levels bore the brunt of the riots, so a lot of the infrastructure was damaged. We're sending in work teams every day with armed escorts to perform repairs, and we've set up Medicaid facilities at strategic points to care for the injured.
So how much of the lower levels are without light or running water at this point? Zahariel asked.
Only about 20%, Morton said. If we can keep any more full-scale riots from breaking out, we can knock that number down even further in the next couple of weeks.
Zahariel nodded, keeping his face impassive. 20% without power or water meant roughly 1 million people trapped in the dark, shivering in the cold, and living off military ration packs for the better part of a month. Is there no way to relocate the affected residents to another level? Morton's craggy brows went up.
Sir, you must be aware that an unknown number of the natives, citizens, are also likely members of the rebellion. It's much more sensible from a military standpoint to keep them isolated and restore service to them than turn them loose in another part of the arcology where they can cause more mischief.
Zahariel turned back to the window and breathed deeply, biting back the outrage he felt. Is this sort of tactic normal when dealing with civil unrest? He asked.
Of course, Morton replied. You've got to get it through their heads that when they destroy Imperial property, they're only going to make their lives harder and more miserable. Sooner or later, the lesson sinks in.
And how many rebels do you create in the process, Zahariel thought. The shuttle had descended to about 2,000 metres by this point, and its turn sharpened as it came in for its final approach. Zahariel saw plumes of smoke rising from the arcology's flanks near ground level, suggesting that the populace was far from learning General Morton's brutal lesson. He was shocked to feel a perverse sense of pride at the thought. They continued their descent, passing below 1,500 metres, before the shuttle pilot pulled up the nose of his craft and flared his thrusters for a vertical landing. The transport touched down on a broad landing pad, one of dozens that jutted from the arcology's northern face, with scarcely a jolt. Morton grunted in satisfaction as he unbuckled his safety harness and climbed wearily to his feet.
"My inspection will likely take the better part of 3 hours," he said to Zahariel. "Do I need to stretch it out further?"
"No need," Zahariel replied. He had yet to climb from his seat. "If I'm not back by the time you're done, return to Alderuk without me. I'll arrange my own transport." Morton paused as though he wanted to inquire further, but after a moment he mastered his curiosity and gave the librarian a curt nod.
"I'll bid you good luck, then," he said,
then turned on his heel and headed for the exit ramp. Zahariel listened to the clang of the general's boots as he descended the ramp. One of the shuttle pilots passed through the passenger compartment, headed aft to check on the shuttle's engines. He waited a full minute more, then rose to his feet and pulled off his plain white surplice to reveal a black body glove beneath. The rebel leaders had agreed to the meeting only on the condition that he come unarmed and unarmored. The stipulation surprised and irritated him. Did they imagine he would call for a parley with treachery in mind? He'd swallowed his aggravation and agreed nonetheless. There was too much at stake to haggle over such trivial details. The librarian reached into an overhead locker and drew out a neatly folded bundle of cloth. Zahariel unfurled the heavy cloak with a snap of his wrists and drew it about his shoulders. When he closed the clasp, the cloak's camelia-line outer layer activated, matching the grey hues of the compartment in less than a second. He drew the cloak's deep hood over his head and headed quickly to the ramp. Outside the shuttle, The air was cold and brisk, with a strong wind blowing down from the mountains. Tattered streamers of smoke curled around the lip of the landing pad. He grimaced as he caught the mingled smell of ash and melted plass. Across the pad, a deep alcove led to a pair of blast doors that gave access to the arcology itself. A shuttle technician stood near the alcove, his back to Zahariel, as he tried to wrestle a heavy refueling hose from a recessed bay set into the pad itself. The Astartes moved swiftly across the pad, the faint sound of his footfalls lost in the idling whine of the shuttle's engines. He passed the technician close enough to touch him if he'd wished. The man glanced up irritably as he felt the wind of Zahariel's passage on his neck, but his gaze swept right past the librarian without registering his presence. Clutching the cloak about his broad frame, Zahariel entered the broad, shadowed alcove and paused beside the blast doors. As near as he could reckon, he had 6 hours before the rendezvous on sublevel 4. He turned to a maintenance access hatch, situated at the side of the alcove to the left of the blast doors. The hatch swung open noiselessly, revealing a cramped space lit with dim red utility lighting and crowded with high-voltage conduits and data trunks. A narrow set of metal rungs led upwards and downwards into darkness. Before he'd left Alderuk, Zahariel had memorized a circuitous route through the Arcology's maze of access ways that would give him the best chance of reaching the rendezvous point unobserved. He'd need every bit of those 6 hours to make it to the meeting on time. The librarian stooped his shoulders and squeezed his way into the human-sized space, then pulled the hatch shut behind him. Darkness closed in on all sides, heavy with the scent of lubricants, ozone, and recycled air. The hum of distant machinery reverberated through his bones. With a deep breath, Zahariel began his descent into the depths. 6 hours and 10 minutes later, Zahariel was crouched in the shadows of the mouth of a maintenance access corridor. Just a few steps away, a metal catwalk ran along the high wall of one of the Arcology's many generator substations. From where he crouched, he had a good view of the rendezvous point on the generator floor 6 meters below. Something was wrong. The time for the rendezvous had come and gone, and the rebel leaders were nowhere in sight. Instead, Zahariel saw a pair of men in utility coveralls waiting at the designated spot. One man puffed worriedly at a clay pipe, while the other tried to calm himself by cleaning his grimy nails with the point of a small knife. They looked like just another pair of generator techs, stealing a few minutes' break away from the watchful eyes of their boss, except for the cut-down las carbines hanging from their shoulders. What had happened to Sard Daviel and the rest? Why had these two men been sent in their stead? Now, after 10 minutes, the men were growing restless. No doubt they were coming to the conclusion that he wasn't going to appear either. Zahariel gritted his teeth in irritation. He could let the men leave and try to follow them back to their superiors, but there was a significant risk that he could lose them in the Arcology's labyrinthine passageways. That left him with only one viable option. The librarian took a few deep breaths, calling on his training to calm his mind and focus his thoughts. Then he rose from concealment, took 3 quick steps, and vaulted over the side of the catwalk. He landed with scarcely a sound, not 3 meters away from the two rebels. The man with the knife let out a startled squawk and recoiled from the Astartes, his eyes widening in fear. The pipe smoker whirled, following the other man's startled gaze. To his credit, he kept his composure much better than his companion.
"You're late," the rebel said around the stem of his pipe.
"I didn't come here to meet with you," Zahariel said coldly. "Where is Sard Daviel?" The two rebels exchanged nervous glances.
"We're supposed to take you to him," the pipe smoker said.
"That wasn't what we agreed upon," Zahariel said, a shade of menace creeping into his voice. The knife wielder blanched, his grip tightening on the handle of his tiny penknife. If the situation hadn't been so serious, the librarian might have been tempted to laugh. The other rebel plucked the pipe from his lips and gave a disinterested shrug.
"Just doing what we're told," he said. "If you mean to parley, then follow us. If not, well, I expect you know the way out."
"Very well," the Astartes said coldly. "Let's go."
"First things first,"
the pipe wielder said. He reached into a pocket of his coveralls and drew out a small Auspex unit. Placing the pipe back in his mouth, he activated the unit and adjusted its settings, then swept it over Zahariel from head to toe. Zahariel felt his collar rise as the rebel performed his scan.
"The agreement
was that I not come armed or armoured," he said, biting off each word. The rebel was unperturbed. "That's as may be. I still have my orders." Finished with the scan, he checked the unit's readout, then nodded to his companion. "He's clear." The second rebel nodded, then put away his penknife and started off towards the mouth of a dimly lit corridor on the far side of the generator room. "Follow him," the pipe wielder said. "I'll be right behind you." Biting back his anger, Zahariel fell into step behind the lead rebel. They walked for more than an hour, following a long, torturous route through the maintenance spaces that would have completely disorientated a normal man. As it was, Zahariel had only a vague notion of where in the arcology they were. He was certain that they descended through another two sublevels, making them at least 100 meters below ground. At the end of the trek, Zahariel found himself walking down a long, dark corridor that seemed to go on for at least a kilometre. After several minutes, he began to see a faint grey luminescence up ahead. He smelled brackish water and wet stone, and a low hissing sound filled his ears. Soon, the grey light resolved itself into a doorway that opened onto a clattering metal catwalk suspended over a man-made waterfall. To the right of the catwalk, close enough to touch, was a wall of plunging water that churned into foam just 2 meters below Zahariel's feet before passing under the catwalk and through a metal grate off to his left. They had reached one of the Arcology's many wastewater purification plants, Zahariel realized. At the far end of the catwalk, about 50 meters away, a small permacrete blockhouse jutted from the chamber wall. Two armed rebels stood outside the blockhouse door, their hands nervously gripping their stolen lasguns. The guards halted them at the end of the catwalk and conferred with Zahariel's guides in low, urgent tones. He tried to listen in on what was being said, but the white noise of the waterfall made it impossible. After a brief exchange, the guards nodded and stepped to one side. The pipe-wielding rebel turned back to Zahariel and gestured to the door with a nod of his head. "They're waiting for you inside," he said. At once, Zahariel's anger began to rise. Without a word, he rushed past the four men, pushing open the door with the flat of his hand and storming inside. He found himself in a small room, perhaps 5 meters to a side, which was lined with banks of controls and flickering data plates. Four rebel soldiers stood in a tight knot on the opposite side of the room, close to a featureless metal door. To his left, Zahariel saw Lord Thuriel and Lord Malkiel sitting in a pair of the control room's utilitarian chairs. Malkiel was clearly agitated, leaning forward in the chair with his hands clenched so tightly his knuckles were white as chalk. Thuriel, on the other hand, was at ease, peering at the librarian over steepled fingers. His dark eyes held nothing but contempt. "So you chose to come after all," Thuriel sneered. "I'd half given up on you." "Had you been at the agreed-upon place, you wouldn't have had to wait," Zahariel shot back. "We haven't the time for games, Lord Thuriel. Where are Lady Alira and Sir Davial?" "That's none of your concern," Thuriel said. He turned slightly and nodded to the men at the door. As one, the four rebels turned to face Zahariel, raising their weapons. Two of the men were armed with heavy, blunt-nosed plasma guns. For a moment, Zahariel could only stare at the rebels. The idea of violating the time-honored tradition of parley shocked him more profoundly than any warp-spawned horror could.
"Upon further consideration, we've decided to make you our guest," Thuriel said with a cruel smile. "I think a high-value hostage will persuade Luther to take our demands seriously."
Zahariel, however, wasn't the least bit cowed. He folded his arms and glared at the rebels.
"I'm going to give you just one chance to put those guns away," he said in a quiet voice.
Thuriel chuckled.
"Or what?" he shot back. "I've heard stories about the legendary toughness of the Astartes, but I rather doubt even you would survive a point-blank shot from a plasma gun."
"None of us would survive, you idiot," Zahariel said scornfully. "In a small room like this, the thermal effects would incinerate us all. Now, I'm going to say this one last time. Put your weapons away, or this parley is finished."
"Parley?" Thuriel said incredulously. "Have you not heard anything I've said? Unless you're here to accede to our terms, we have nothing to discuss."
Before Zahariel could reply, the door behind the rebel soldiers banged open. Sir Davial appeared, shoving his way roughly past the startled gunmen. Behind him came Lady Alira, her face pale and her expression fierce. She, in turn, was followed by a third figure, stoop-shouldered and lean, and clad in a plain white surplice, identical to Zahariel's own. The librarian looked into the figure's seamed face and felt a shock like a thunderbolt course up his spine. It was Master Ramiel.
"Thuriel, you damned fool!" snarled Sardaviel. "You've got no idea what you're playing at here. Tell your men to put away their guns right now, or I'll do it for them!"
The old knight's scarred hands clenched into fists. He looked entirely ready to make good his threat. Daviel's scornful tone brought Lord Thuriel out of his chair.
"Mind your tongue when you're talking to your betters, you old dog," he warned, "or you'll wind up sharing the same cell as this hyper-muscled monstrosity here." "Listen to me," Sardaviel said, his voice low and insistent. "Zahariel is here under the terms of parley. Do you understand what that means?"
"Parley?" Thuriel said with a harsh laugh. "I've had quite enough of your romantic notions of warfare, Daviel. Do you imagine that Luther has suddenly had a change of heart and wants to negotiate with us? Use your head, man!" He pointed an accusing finger at Zahariel.
"For all we know, he called this parley to draw us into the open so he could kill us." "Shut up, Thuriel!"
Lord Ramiel snapped. The old master's voice was roughened with age, but still bore the same lash of authority he'd wielded at Alderuk.
"Have your men put away their weapons before Zahariel decides that the parley is void and turns your paranoid suspicions into reality."
The noble recoiled from the command as though he'd been slapped. The rebel gunmen wavered, casting uncertain glances between the rebel leaders as if unsure who to follow. When Thuriel didn't respond at once, Lady Elira wormed her way between the gunmen and pushed the muzzles of the plasma guns downward.
"Enough of this madness," she declared.
Then, to Zahariel, she said,
"I regret this misunderstanding has occurred, Sir Zahariel. Lord Thuriel and Lord Malkiel acted rashly and without the sanction of the rest of our leadership. In fact," she continued, shooting an angry glance at the two noblemen, "they conspired to delay the rest of us so that we couldn't interfere with their treachery."
"Now, look here,"
Malkiel said, rising nervously from his chair.
"I never wanted any part of this. Lord Thuriel said..."
"We've heard more than enough of what Lord Thuriel has to say," Ramiel snapped. "I advise the both of you to hold your tongue from this point forward. At the moment, I'm of the opinion you're a bigger threat to our cause than Luther and his minions, and nothing in the terms of parley prevents me from having the both of you shot."
Ramiel's threat ended the confrontation at a stroke. The gunmen withdrew to stand by the doorway behind the rebel leaders, their weapons held at port arms. Malkiel went pale, and his mouth snapped shut at once. Thuriel held his tongue as well, though his body trembled with barely contained rage. Zahariel observed the entire exchange with outward calm, though inwardly his mind reeled at the implications of the scene played out before him. It had been obvious from the start that the insurgents were very well informed about Imperial strategy and tactics, but Luther and General Morton had assumed that deserters from the Jaeger regiments were the cause. The truth, Zahariel now realized, was far worse, and called into question many of their assumptions about the rebels and their motives.
"It was you all along," Zahariel said, his heart sinking with the realization.
"How many years did you pretend to be our brother while you were laying the groundwork for this rebellion? When did you forsake your oaths to the Primarch, Master? Did it happen the day that Luther returned from the Crusade, or when Johnson passed you over and chose another to become Lord Cipher?"
"It was Johnson's treachery that brought us all to this,"
Ramiel said. The old master's voice was sharp as drawn steel.
"An oath born from deceit is no oath at all. His lies! Save your breath, my lord,"
Sardaviel said, resting a hand on Ramiel's arm.
"It won't do you any good."
The maimed knight let go of the old master and took a step towards Zahariel, his expression stern and unforgiving.
"You called for a parley, and in honour of the old ways we obliged you. What is it you want?"
With an effort, Zahariel tore his gaze away from Ramiel and collected his thoughts. He'd rehearsed this conversation in his head 100 times on the way to the Arcology. "I'm here because of what you said to Luther just before you got on the shuttle back at Alderuk." Sardaviel's one good eye narrowed thoughtfully. He gave Zahariel a searching look, and then sudden comprehension dawned across his scarred face.
"You've seen something, haven't you?" "What's happened?"
Ramiel said, a note of concern creeping into his voice. Zahariel hesitated, knowing that he had reached the point of no return. Luther had forbidden him to discuss the matter with anyone, but if he didn't, Caliban was doomed. Slowly at first, then with gathering speed and determination, he told the rebel leaders what he'd found at Sigma 517. When he was done, Zahariel studied the faces of each rebel leader in turn. Daviel and Master Ramiel cast sidelong glances at one another, their expressions grim. Lady Alira and Lord Malkiel were pale with shock, while Lord Thuriel's jaw tightened with building outrage.
"What is he talking about?" Thuriel demanded. "What's this taint he keeps referring to?"
He took a step towards the two older knights, his hands clenching into fists.
"How long have you been keeping this from us?"
Daviel glared forbiddingly at the angry noble.
"It's none of your concern, Thuriel," he growled. "Believe me, the less you know about this, the better."
"And now you presume to tell me what I have a right to know? You're no better than the damned Imperials."
Thuriel turned to Lady Alira.
"I told you we couldn't trust them,"
he snarled, pointing an accusing finger at the old knights.
"Who knows what other secrets they're hiding? For all we know, they might have been working with Luther all along."
"Thuriel, will you please just shut up?"
Lady Alira said, her voice trembling faintly. She pressed a hand to her forehead, and Zahariel could see that she was struggling to come to grips with what she'd been told.
"Can't you see what's at stake here?"
"Of course I can,"
Thuriel snarled.
"In fact, I see things a great deal more clearly than you, Alira. I see that the Terrans aren't content with raping our world. Now they're feeding our people to monsters. And these two old fools knew it, but kept it to themselves."
"We knew nothing of the kind, you arrogant, self-centered dolt,"
Daviel shot back.
"Master Ramiel and I were protecting our people from monsters long before you were born, and don't you forget it."
He jabbed a gnarled finger at the ruined side of his face.
"You want to talk about monsters, boy? You show me the scars you earned fighting them. Otherwise, shut your damned mouth."
"So that's it, eh? Just shut up and trust you, like we trusted Luther and Johnson and all those vultures from the Administratum,"
Thuriel shouted back. His right hand fell to the pistol, holstered at his hip.
"Never again, Daviel, you hear me? Never again."
The nobleman glared at Daviel for a long moment. The knight regarded Thuriel coldly, pointedly folding his arms in the face of the other man's threat. The rebel gunmen at the back of the room fingered their weapons nervously. Before the situation could escalate further, however, Lord Malkiel leapt from his chair and gripped Thuriel's left arm.
"Leave it, cousin," Malkiel hissed fearfully. "Nothing good can come of this."
Thuriel gritted his teeth in consternation, weighing his options. Finally, he drew his hand away from his weapon.
"For once, Malkiel, you may be right,"
the nobleman said. Thuriel swept a haughty gaze over the knights, Lady Alira and Zahariel.
"We're finished, do you hear? You'll not get another coin from me to finance your little games of deception. I'll find another way to set our people free from the likes of Johnson and his ilk. See if I won't."
He turned and stormed from the room with a nervous Malkiel close behind.
"Damn that Malkiel,"
Sir Daviel said as the door slammed shut behind them.
"Another moment more and Thuriel would have done something foolish. Then we could have been rid of the both of them."
Zahariel frowned. "Was it wise to let them go?" he asked.
"You'd rather he were here, using up good air,"
Alira said disgustedly. She waved her hand in dismissal.
"Thuriel provides us with money and outrage and not much else. He doesn't have any real support inside the movement. Let him go. We've got much more important things to worry about."
Sir Daviel looked to Ramiel.
"Things are far worse than we feared," he said gravely.
Ramiel nodded, but he continued to stare searchingly at Zahariel.
"Why have you told us this?"
he asked his old pupil.
"Because we're running out of time," Zahariel replied. "We've got to stop the Terrans before they unleash their master ritual.
But if we send in a major force of Astartes to search for them, we risk drawing the attention of the Administratum."
"Who wouldn't hesitate to condemn the planet and its people if they learned the truth?"
Ramiel concluded.
"Condemn?"
Alira said. "What does that mean?"
"The Imperium views warp taint as a cancer, if you will. A tumor on the human soul," Ramiel said. "Not without reason, of course. No sane person wants to see a return of old night. But the problem here is that Caliban's taint runs deeper than just a handful of debased individuals. It permeates the very bedrock of the world.
Then how does one go about curing it?
She said, her voice rising with exasperation. The old master sighed.
With fire. What else?
He eyed Zahariel coldly.
The Imperium would relocate the Legion and as many of its loyal servants as it could. Perhaps a few 100,000 could be saved. The rest...
That's why this must be kept secret, Zahariel said calmly. His eyes never left Ramiel's. The old master's eyebrows rose.
That sounds like something very close to rebellion, young Zahariel.
The librarian shook his head. Luther and I swore an oath to protect the people of Caliban long before the coming of the Emperor, he replied. As did you. Sardavial nodded slowly.
All right, he said. What do you want from us?
A truce, Zahariel said simply. Help us find the Terrans quickly and quietly, and we'll send in a kill team to eliminate them. Alira shook her head.
I don't think so, she said. Leave these sorcerers to us. We can take care of them.
Would that were so, Lady Alira, Ramiel said heavily. But Zahariel is right. Our people are no match for these creatures. This is a task for the Astartes.
But we don't even know for certain that these sorcerers are here, Alira protested. A truce at this point benefits the Imperials, not us. Their control of the Arcology is balanced on a knife edge. If we give them time to catch their breath, bring in more reinforcements...
The noblewoman's voice trailed away as she watched a wordless exchange pass between Ramiel and Sardavial.
There's something else, isn't there?
She asked. Daviel nodded.
We didn't tell you before for reasons of security, he said gravely. But we've lost contact with a number of our sub-level cells over the last 2 weeks.
How many cells?
Alira demanded.
14, Ramiel answered. Possibly as many as 16. Two others missed their last scheduled report this morning, but that could be the result of equipment failure.
The news sent a jolt down Zahariel's spine. How many cells do you have in the sublevels? Daviel shifted uncomfortably.
A significant number, he said. The Jaegers don't have the manpower to penetrate much beyond sublevel 2, so we keep our combat teams on the lowest sublevels between raids.
How many men have you lost so far? Zahariel pressed. Tell me.
132, the maimed knight answered. All of them well-trained and well-equipped, and all of them lost without so much as a single box transmission. Frankly, we were starting to suspect that you'd sent Astartes teams into the sublevels to root us out.
Zahariel shook his head. It's begun, he said. They're gathering bodies just like they did at Sigma 517. Alira's face twisted in a bitter grimace.
As though the Terrans would have a hard time finding corpses in that charnel house.
Charnel house? Zahariel echoed. What do you mean? Lady Alira stared open-mouthed at the Astartes.
Don't pretend you don't know,
she said, her eyes blazing angrily. Zahariel held up a hand. On my honour, lady, I have no idea what you're talking about.
Then who is responsible for the atrocities committed in your name?
She said coldly.
5 million people crammed into 3 levels built to hold a quarter of that number. No power, intermittent supplies of food and water, no functioning sanitation. What did you think was going to happen? People are dying by the hundreds every day. The bodies are tossed down maintenance shafts or piled in lifts and sent to the lower levels so the survivors don't have to live among the corpses.
The news stunned Zahariel.
This wasn't reported back to us at Alderaak,
he said, his voice choked with outrage.
Is there any way to know how many have died?
Ramiel shook his head.
Tens of thousands, son. Perhaps more.
Zahariel nodded thoughtfully. The Terrans knew. That's why they returned to the Arcology. He looked to Ramiel. The incident at Sigma 517 was a field test, he said, like a pupil solving a problem for his tutor. They needed to refine the ritual, test its effects on a smaller scale before unleashing it here. An image came to him of an army of animated bodies shambling and crawling up out of the depths to slaughter the millions penned like sheep in the sublevels above. There's no time to waste, he said. If there's another outbreak of violence here, the Terrans will have all the psychic energy they need to begin a large-scale ritual. We've got to find them before it's too late. Zahariel stepped forward, holding out his empty hand to the rebels. Will you agree to the truce? Alira and Sardavial looked to Ramiel. The old master stared at Zahariel's open hand for a long moment, a tormented look on his face. Finally, he straightened and looked his former student in the eye.
For the pact to be binding, it must be sworn by both leaders, he said sternly. If Luther gives me his hand, then I shall take it. Until then, we can have no truce between us.
Then come back with me to Alderuk, Zahariel said, his voice taut. We can be back at the fortress in 2 hours.
Ramiel's eyes narrowed.
Are you so certain he will agree to this?
Of course, Zahariel replied, putting more sincerity into his voice than he actually felt. Do you imagine Caliban's greatest living knight would hold his honour so cheaply?
If Ramiel sensed the doubt in Zahariel's heart, he did not let it show.
Very well, he said with a curt nod. Sardavial will join us to help coordinate our forces.
He turned to Lady Alira.
Alert our remaining cells and organize a search of the sublevels at once. If you locate the Terrans, do not attempt to engage them. Do you understand?
Alira nodded. On impulse, she reached out and laid her hands on Ramiel's own.
Are you sure of this? She asked. You swore you'd never return to the fortress. You said they'd betrayed everything you believed in. How can you trust them now?
Ramiel sighed.
This isn't about trust, he said to her. It's about honour, and a last chance at redemption. I owe it to them, Alira. I owe it to myself.
He gently pushed her hands away.
Now go. Zahariel is right, we haven't much time.
He smiled.
I will return with the Knights of Caliban at my back, or I will not return at all.